Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Special episode number 12, Midsummer 2009. Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. We'd like to wish you a very warm welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show.
We would. This is the holiday special for Midsummer 2009. And as you know, in our holiday specials, we bring you some music, stories and poetry from modern authors and try to have some fun along the way.
That's right. And in this enormous show, you'll hear six great pieces of music, a little bit of information about the Festival of Midsummer, a section from Rhonda Carpenter's wonderful Celtic novel, The Mark of a Druid, and a poem and a story from two of our listeners.
Okay. We'd better get straight into it then.
News and views?
Oh, yes, news and views. Our news in this holiday special episode is to tell you about all the wonderful submissions that we have had sent to us for the show and the website.
That's true. People have been so kind.
Yes, they have. You guys are so talented. So let's start with some poetry in the listener-inspired section of the website. We've got a big thank you to Don and Kim McKee for their poems Earth Mother and The Pattern.
They really are beautiful as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then there are some wonderful goblin pictures painted by Justin Russell that you can find in the image galleries section of the website. I just love these little men. They remind me so much of the Wee Free Men from Terry Pratchett.
Yes, what is...
Oh, what were they called?
What's the book called? Or is it The Wee Free Men?
Yeah, it's called The Wee Free Men.
Ah, right.
They appear in several of his stories, but...
They're great, aren't they?
These little guys...
Are they like McFeagles or something?
That's right, yes. They're called the McFeagles.
That's it.
And Justin's just done this absolute image that I had in my head when I read the books. It's just amazing.
So there's some superb art there.
There certainly is. And as well as that, you can also find galleries by Amy Reavis, who painted the cover for The Mark of the Druid that we're reading later on, and Patrick Turner, who is an astounding fantasy and fae artist.
Oh, yes.
Really have been so lucky.
We have. And I'd like to send in a special thank you to Patrick, who's worked on a wonderful font for our show logo that you'll see start to appear all over the place. Patrick, we're blown away, and I'm speechless. Thank you so much for the gift, my friend.
Yes, thank you so much, Patrick. We've also been nominated for the 2009 Parsec Awards for Speculative Fiction Podcasting.
That's true. And we're incredibly proud to be in the company of some of the other truly great podcasts.
There's a badge linking to the nominations on our website, so pop along and have a nosy round if you're looking for some other great shows.
And just to keep the excitement going a bit longer, our major news is that our first competition draws to a close and we'll be announcing the two lucky winners at the end of the show.
Yay!
Yay.
Cool beans. So then, shall we kick off with a piece of music?
Yes, it's crack on. We'll start with the wonderful Celtic sound of Mooncoin by the Irish Experience.
Thank you.
That was Mooncoin by The Irish Experience from their album Green Energy. And what a rip-roaring start to the show.
These guys are great, aren't they?
They're great, aren't they?
Yeah. There's three guys in the band, and they've been going since 1966. It shows in the quality of their music, I think.
Yes, some great Celtic tunes, and we hope to hear from more of those in the future.
Brilliant. Now let's find out a little bit more about the Festival of Midsummer.
Midsummer celebrations. Last year, we found out a bit about exactly what the solstice is and how it's celebrated. This year, let's remind ourselves about the solstice and focus a bit more on some of the customs the night before Midsummer's Day or Midsummer's Eve.
Technically, a solstice is an astronomical point, and due to the precession of the equinox, the date may vary by a few days depending on the year. The summer solstice occurs when the sun reaches the Tropic of Cancer, and we then experience the longest day and the shortest night of the year. Astrologers know this as a date on which the sun enters the sign of Cancer.
However, since most European peasants were not accomplished at reading an ephemeris, or did not live close enough to Salisbury Plain to trot over to Stonehenge and sight down its main avenue, they celebrated the event on a fixed calendar date, June the 24th. The slight forward displacement of the traditional date is the result of multitudinous calendrical changes down through the ages. It is analogous to the winter solstice celebration, which is astronomically on or about December the 21st, but is celebrated on the traditional date of December the 25th, Yule, later adopted by Christians.
Again, it must be remembered that the Celts reckoned their days from sundown to sundown. So the June the 24th festivities actually begin on the previous sundown, our June the 23rd. This was Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Eve. Which brings up another point. Our modern calendars are quite misguided in suggesting that summer begins on the solstice. According to the old folk calendar, summer begins on May Day and ends on Lammas, August the 1st, Lunasa, with the summer solstice midway between the two, marking mid-summer. This makes more logical sense than suggesting summer begins on a day when the sun's power begins to wane and the days grow shorter.
Midsummer Night by Thomas Wright, 1865.
The eve of Midsummer, or of St. John, was in popular superstition one of the most important days of the medieval year. The Need Fire, or the St. John's Fire as it was called, was kindled just at midnight, the moment when the solstice was supposed to take place, and the young people of both sexes danced around it, and above all things, leapt over it, or rushed through it, which was looked upon not only as a purification, but as a protection against evil influences. It was the night when ghosts and other beings of the spiritual world were abroad, and when witches had most power. It was believed even that during this night, people's souls left the body in sleep and wandered over the world, separated from it. It was a night of the great meetings of the witches, and it was that in which they mixed their most deadly poisons and performed their most effective charms. It was a night especially favourable to divination in every form, and in which maidens sought to know their future sweethearts and husbands. It was during this night also that plants possessed their greatest powers, either for good or for evil, and that they were dug up with all due ceremonies and cautions.
Hidden virtues of plants, indeed, depended much on the time at which and the ceremonies with which they were gathered, and these latter were extremely superstitious, no doubt derived from the remote ages of paganism. As usual, the clergy applied a half-remedy to the evil. They forbade any rites or incantations in the gathering of medicinal herbs except by repeating the Creed and the Lord's Prayer.
As already stated, the night of St. John's, or Midsummer's Eve, was that when ghosts and spirits of all descriptions were abroad, and when witches assembled, and their potions for good or evil and charms were made with most effect. The most secret practices of the old popular superstitions are now mostly forgotten, but when here and there we meet with a few traces of them, they are of a character which leads us to believe that they belong to a great extent to that same worship of the generative powers which prevailed so generally among all peoples.
We remember that maidens who wished to know if their lovers were constant or not were directed to go out exactly at midnight on St. John's Eve, to strip themselves entirely naked, and in that condition proceed to a plant or shrub, the same name of which was given, and round it they were to form a circle and dance, repeating at the same time certain words which they'd been taught by their instructress. Having completed the ceremony, they were to gather the leaves of the plant round which they'd danced, which they were to carry home and place under their pillows, and what they wished to know would be revealed to them in their dreams. We have seen in some of the medieval treatises on the virtues of plants directions for gathering some plants of especial importance, in which it was required that this should be performed by young girls in a similar state of complete nakedness.
Oh, I don't know whether you noticed, but the first piece of music that you heard in that last section was also by the Irish Experience, called The Fiddler's Lament, and we'll let you hear that properly in a later show.
One of our listeners and friends is a very talented man called Andrew Hargreaves, and he's given us permission to bring you a wonderful poem that he wrote back in 207. 207.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
Sorry, Andrew. 2007. Anyway, that he wrote in 2007, and it's called Gathering.
Gathering by Andrew Hargreaves. With castaway cloaks all tattered and torn, we climb the high hill with trees for a crown. Sky-blasted oak, the ash and the thorn sing to the moon as the horn goes round. Light up the stars in the dark before dawn. We dance now together on this sacred ground with castaway cloaks all tattered and torn. Dragons of cloud drift by, grey and white. Rain drifts a veil in a shroud us to wind, soft as the wings of the owl in the night. Wind from the west comes sighing to find we gather close round in the red firelight. Sing we now softly of those gone before, with castaway cloaks or tattered and torn. Come dance! We are gathered from forests afar to fly with the clouds all moonlit above, by tall tree and standing stone, light of the star, filled with the songs and the stories and love. Tread our way softly through glassy dew grass before the fresh dawn comes to claim us at last. Away we are flown in the arms of the morn with castaway cloaks all tattered and torn.
That was beautiful, Andrew. Thank you.
It was, thank you. And now let's have another piece of music from the new album by Willow Song. Have a listen to the title track, The Storyteller.
Just lately, when you play your music, give thanks to the gods, don't let it stop. Now this is the sum of the storyteller, a teller of tales, both old and new. Clap your hands and sing along, you'll be part of every song. This is the sum of the storyteller, a teller of tales, both old and new. Clap your hands and sing along, you'll be part of every song.
You can find out more about Daryl and his friends that make up Willow's Song in our show notes. This album has only just been released and has some wonderful, innocent sing-along tunes on it. And now, let's listen to the story that was sent to us by the witchy godmother.
I Forgot by the Witchy Godmother. Once upon a time, in our favourite village, there lived an old woman who was not really like all the others. The others, who were considered old or an elder, sat in front of the local hall and talked of old times, how things had changed, who had died and who had had babies. They gossiped and rocked and moved very slow. If the children of the village asked them to play, they would shake their head and say slowly,
"No, little one, I am much too old for that."
Now this lady was named Georgette, and she was a very happy, busy soul. She wore bright colours and danced down the street. She never would sit with the others of her age and talk. The children would find her in the park, and she taught them how to fly a kite and which tree was the best for hiding in. She ran and played with them. When the others of her age yelled to her,
"You can't do that. A woman your age shouldn't run like that. You could hurt yourself,"
Georgette would blush and simply say, "I forgot," and go on her way. The others would shake their head and think someday she will pay. Georgette, when she was home, would look into her mirror and see if what the others said was true. She saw they were wrong, for in her mirror she was as young as she always was. Her eyes shone and sparkled with fun. She was not built like an old lady, but slender and firm. Nothing was sagging or bagging on her. Her mirror was magic, you see, and only showed what was inside. And of course, inside, we never grow old. She would dress only in her most favourite clothes, though she mused to herself that those who were making the clothes were getting the sizes wrong. But she would laugh and slip her brightly coloured skirt on, and a silky top to match, and grab her red hat and head out the door looking for fun. She played hopscotch and never thought it might look silly. The children loved her and their parents envied her energy. She hopped a fence one day and her old friend Gertrude yelled,
"You can't do that. You're much too old to jump fences anymore."
Georgette smiled and laughed and said, "I forgot." The old people fussed and gossiped about Georgette. They knew something had to be done for her own good. She was much too old to behave like that. They decided to take her to an old people's place, where she'd be kept under a watchful eye, and they would never let her run and play in such a dangerous way. They loved her dearly and thought it was for her best. Her friend Gertrude came over one day and asked Georgette to go for a walk with her. Well, of course she would go, and away they went. Georgette had to walk slower so her friend could keep up.
"Oh, look at those poor old people," Georgette exclaimed as she walked into the old people's place. "But my dear, you're as old as they are," said Gertrude. Georgette looked shocked. "Oh, no, I'm not. Gertrude came to a mirror nearby. "Just look." Georgette peered into the mirror. It was not magic like hers, and showed her the image of what others saw. She took in what was an old woman in very bright clothes. She saw all the wrinkles, the fatness, the folds. Tears welled up in her eyes. The sparkle was gone. "Oh my, there's an old woman wearing my face," she exclaimed. As her knees began to buckle, they came with a chair and wheeled the old woman to her room to stay. Gertrude looked happy to see her friend safe, but she frowned a little to see the twinkle gone from Georgette's face. The change was horrible to see. Every day, Georgette just sat and looked at the old woman wearing her face. She wore what the others wore. She ate what they ate. Bland stuff that was good for their age. Those that sat at the public square talked about the change that had happened to Georgette. She was not the lady that had caused so much fun, but even older than they. And she no longer shone. They didn't want that. They just wanted her to have a care. But what they did, they didn't know how to undo. Fortunately, there was a very young lad by the name of Bartholomew. Now he listened to everyone around the town and knew there was something special at Georgette's house that kept Georgette young at heart. Bartholomew heard what the adults said, and he was determined to help his friend. He wanted her to come kite flying with him again. He ran to Georgette's house, although it was dark, and he grabbed the mirror that seemed to glow and covered it with his coat. He went to the old people's place and asked if he could visit his friend. He said he had a gift for her and would like to spend some time with her. The attendants were glad to see this young friend, for they didn't like how Georgette was seeming to shrink away. Bartholomew went into her room and nearly didn't recognise the old woman who sat and stared in the mirror that was not magic. She didn't notice the boy, and he slipped closer and slipped the mirror over the top of the other. Georgette blinked once, and then she blinked twice. She looked, and she looked at the mirror that showed her true form. She wasn't that old woman with wrinkles and sores. She was too young, and she knew it to be true. Georgette then saw Bartholomew there.
"What are you doing, young Bartholomew?" she asked,
her voice getting stronger as each moment passed.
"I came to get you, Georgette. The weather's beautiful for kite flying at last."
She stood up and grabbed her bright-coloured coat.
"Well then, we should not waste the day."
She took his hand and they left from that place. Georgette first went home and hung her mirror in its place, changed her clothes to her pretty bright colours, then grabbed her kite and ran out of the door to meet Bartholomew and his friends, to go fly them once more. When the old ones at the public square saw Georgette, strong and young and running for fun, one took a breath to tell her to stop, and Gertrude covered his mouth and said, "She forgot." They all laughed and smiled and went to watch the fun. Perhaps Georgette would let them see their true faces in her mirror later, and then they could play. For the true self inside never grows old. Only the package gets worn.
Was beautiful, really beautiful. Thank you so much for that story.
It was lovely, wasn't it?
Mm.
I think she told me it was inspired by Willie Meikle's wonderful story, One Spring Eve, that we read at the spring equinox. You know, the one about the old woman and the twilight encounter.
Oh yes, I remember. Another beautiful story. Now, talking about twilight encounters, this midsummer time of year is famous for encounters with the fae. And we've got the first of our Midsummer Night songs for you now.
Oh yes, listen to the glorious voice of Gillian Ladage. A lady that describes herself as being enthralled with the world of the Celts.
Oh, I know how that feels.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, have a listen to the beautiful Midsummer Nights by Gillian LaDage from her album The Ancestry.
Thank you.
you're right. She has a beautiful voice. That song was recommended to us by the astounding fiddler Samantha Gilligley, who has played for us before and is now playing for the YouTube Symphony Orchestra.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sam. It was great, and good luck with the orchestra. And now I feel it's time for a drink. In particular, a drink at the Dragon's Head pub with old Duncan.
All right, then. And as usual, we'd like to say a big thank you to Andy Guthrie, our resident Scottish Yarnicky, for this tale involving Angus Og and Manannan.
Walk through the oaks.
Lovely idea. Hey, let me help you through the lych gate.
This church must be hundreds of years old. Look at the overgrown gravestones.
Oh, yes, yeah. William McAllister, 1825, beloved father of...
Oh, look, who's that in the meadow? It looks like...
Yes, it's Duncan. Let's go and say hello.
Duncan, how are you?
Hello there, you two. I be fine, me friends. Having a walk, are you?
Yes, we thought we'd have a wander through the grove.
What are you up to in the meadow then, Duncan?
Ah, I be soaking up the heat in me bones, laddie.
And you'll be doing that in your slippers then, Duncan?
Well, to be fair, lassie, bird indoors chase me out with a broom. Seems to think I should be sweeping the floors this fine morn.
Yes, well, perhaps you should be helping her, Duncan.
Listen, lassie. Can I distract you with a story?
Oh, yes, anything, Duncan, please do.
Excellent. Thank you, Duncan. Listen, sweetheart, you keep the recorder going and I'll nip over to the Dragon's Head and bring us a couple of pints.
Okay, then.
It's a grand idea, laddie. I'll watch over your lassie again.
Back in a minute, you old goat.
Right, are you sitting comfy, lass?
Fine, thank you, Duncan.
I'll be telling you the story of the sleep of Angus Og. You heard that one yet, lassie?
No, I don't think so, Duncan. I'm looking forward to it.
Right then. At one noon in the month of the hazel and the bramble, Angus lay asleeping in the hills, and he lay in the heather, with the bracken about him. On the mountain slope, there were a juniper now tall enough to give rest to your Ivan, and all the bracken was gold and the heather was purple, and there was no outstanding object on the hill bar a rowan tree. It grew midway up the mountain, and it leaned to the sun, and its leaves were the colour of brass. Berries were bronze. And it was here Angus slept with his hair upon the grass. And above him, sky were a sea blue. And there were nae breath of wind on the ridges of Ben Monach. Yet where there were nae eyes to see, Orchil had lifted her gaze frae beneath the heather. The goldenness o'er her mantle on the looms had ceased. She that wove the loom of life and death. And she looks broodingly at Angus the ever young, a lord of love, and music and song.
Is it time indeed he slept?
She murmured, and she felt the blood redding in her lips, and a pulse in her quiet veins, like a wild beast that is caged. Aye, thank you, laddie. Much needed is this one.
You're welcome, Duncan.
Now then, the three old gods came over the hill and advanced on the yellow hair one that lies in a dream. And when they came upon him, Angus, they tried to wake him. But Orchil had breathed her breath across a granite rock and blown immemorial age upon him. Say the voices of the old gods was no mare in his ears.
Awake,
said Keor, with the voice of the pine forest.
Awake,
said Manannan, with the voice of the sea that hollows and booms.
Awake,
said Asus, with the voice of the rushing green world. But Angus stirred not, but dreamed of a mighty eagle soaring into infinity.
He will awake nae mair,
murmured Keor. And the god of the green world played on the reed. For the passing of Angus, a sweet song.
He will awake Neymar,
murmured Mananan, god of the dividing seas and the hillside. We'd a sound of ocean music as in a shell, mournful and ancient.
He will awake Neymar,
murmured Jesus, the unseen god, whose pulse is beneath the deepest sea, and whose breath is the frosty light in the firmament betwixt the earth and the sun, and the light that moved like a vast tide. But Angus slept as the dead sleep, and Ochil smiled.
They're old and ancient gods,
she whispered.
They're so old that they can see eternity and unchanging.
Ochil once more turned from her loom of life and death. She lifted her eyes till her gaze made the brown earth rise above the green world, and then Angus was wrapped in a shroud of white snow. And at noon, the snow would melt where Angus lay. Ochil takes a shadow from her loom, puts a band around Ben Monarch, where Angus lay under the mountain ash. 1,000 years passed, and then the green smell of larches drift from winter to spring. And again Ochil lifted her eyes from her loom of life and death, and Angus wee his yellow hair still lay in a dream neath the snow. And then the three old gods came over the hill.
Awake, Angus,
cries Kaor.
Awake, Angus,
cries Mananan.
Awake, Angus,
cries Jesus.
Awake,
awake,
the world is grown cold and needy.
They cries, for they had the grey grief upon them. Ochil put down her shuttle frae her loom, and she spoke to the old gods.
Answer me this, Kaor. If death were to come to you,
what would happen?
What would happen?
The green earth would wither and die.
And Mananan, if death were to come to you, what would happen?
The deep sea would run dry.
And Jesus, if death were to come to you, what would happen?
There would be nae pulse at the heart of the earth, and there would be darkness and silence.
Ochil laughed, and yet when Angus had the snow sleep of 1,000 years, none knew it. For 1,000 years has been the warm breath of lovers. For 1,000 years he has been the pulse in the heart of love. For 1,000 years the rhythmic beat of the world. And for 1,000 years he was the memory against oblivion. And yet, not one dreamed o' Angus Og.
Who is he? Is he older than I, who saw the green earth born?
Cries Kaor.
Who is he? Is he older than I, who saw the first waters come frae the void?
Cries Mananan.
Who is he? Is he older than I, who saw the first comet in the starry flood?
Cries Jesus.
He is older.
He is the soul of the gods. And with that, she blew across the pan with her hand and took away the immemorial age from Angus.
Awake, eternal spring,
she cried. And Angus awoke, with laughter and joy, and the whole green earth was veiled in a carpet of blossom.
Arise, eternal youth,
she cried. And Angus arose and smiled, and the old brown earth was clad in green. And everywhere the pulse of love was leaping in beating hearts.
Go forth, eternal Lord.
And Angus passed into sun flood, rainbows on the hills, and everywhere there was a wild joy. Ah.
That was wonderful, Duncan.
It was. Thank you so much.
It glads me old heart that you're liking me tale. Shall we enjoy the bounty of Kaor in this meadow for a while?
That sounds good. Then what do you reckon on popping over the road for a ploughman's?
Oh yes, I'm up for that one.
And I'll not be saying nay to your free lunch, young'uns.
That was wonderful, wasn't it?
Yes, Andy's tales have so much in them. I can just see that meadow and feel the warm sun.
cheese and pickle of that ploughman's along with the beer still sounds good to me. That's one of the joys of Midsummer. And another joy, of course, is the magic of the night time.
Oh yes, Midsummer's Night. And to go with it, we have the beautiful Midsummer Night's Dream by Karen Kay and Michael Tingle.
Song. Thank you, Karen. I also hope that the Three Wishes Fairy Fest down in Cornwall went very well for you.
Yes, it certainly seemed to. I've been looking at the pictures on the net.
Beautiful.
And hopefully next year we'll be able to come down and see you guys and bring everyone a little flavour from the festival.
That would be great.
So, what's next?
Well, time for the main story in our show.
Ooh, exciting. What have we got?
Ah, do you remember we played a promo for the lovely Celtic podcast and novel The Mark of a Druid by Rhonda Carpenter?
Yes, I love that book.
You did, didn't you? Well, today's story is from that book. It's set at Beltane rather than Midsummer, but we thought you wouldn't mind, as it's such an exciting story.
Yes, let's let Rhonda introduce the story.
When 26-year-old Eve McCormick awakes, the images from her nightmare are indelible. The dreams feel so real, she must force herself to get a grip. This experience is just the beginning for Eve, a Los Angeles clinical hypnotherapist and researcher investigating whether reincarnation is fact or fiction. Unstoppable visions of an ancient lifetime steal days from her. The danger escalates when she wakes up physically injured and marked with a strange symbol. While Eve battles the past to maintain her sanity and safety, her project is jeopardized by another researcher's attempts to take over. One partner dies, and another is accused of inappropriate conduct. Eve and her friend, Dr. Andrea McMurray, don't believe in coincidence and probe their shared visions for answers. On the other side of the Atlantic, Welshman Ryerson Sanders is haunted by his dreams and believes Eve's research project can help him. For both of them, an ancient Celtic prophecy and long-sought revenge entangles the past with the present. A druidess and a shapeshifter must join to save the druid way of life, while a queen conspires to kill Erin's only high king. Will the oaths and agendas of the past reach across the centuries to strengthen or destroy?
That was great, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
And now we enter the story at the point where all the clans get together at the amazing ring of stones, and our hero, the shape changer, is about to show the others exactly what he can do. Chapter 33, The Gathering, Part 1. Craig adjusted the time on his watch while the Boeing 747 lifted from LaGuardia's tarmac.
Right on time,
he said to Ryerson.
Setting that watch to Los Angeles time?
Ryerson grinned at his friend. Craig nodded and tucked wavy strands of blonde hair behind his ear.
About 5 hours, we'll have our feet back on the ground.
He turned his attention to the page of numbers in front of him.
You know, I've been looking at this bloody thing for so long, I can't tell anymore if it's ready or not.
It's ready. All we have to do now is follow the plan. We make it through these meetings and decide if the deal is for us.
Right. Look, I'm just a bit nervous. I mean, after 3 years of development, we've got a lot to gain, but I'm not sure about moving to the good old US of A.
Well, nothing is set in stone, old man. If what JR presented holds true, then we've a bit of negotiating room for the logistics. They make the offer sweet enough. I'll be wanting to immigrate.
Ryerson said with a wink of his eye. The seatbelt light blinked off.
Think I'll stretch me legs.
Ryerson rose, arched, and knuckled his lower back whilst walking to the lavatory. When he returned, Craig was dozing, his face covered with the baseball cap. Ryerson decided rest was the best cure for pending jet lag. He buckled into his seat and drifted off with the roar of the engines vibrating beneath him. Among Adam's people, Beltane was a time to be celebrated. It was the welcoming of summer, a time for sacrifices to the Great Mother. Adam didn't feel like celebrating. He too would be making sacrifices tonight. His clan had travelled 5 days to the Valley of the Stone Circle. He was tired of training for the life that he was supposed to embrace.
Why him?
he wondered.
Why her? Was she here in the crowd below?
Forcing his mind to stillness, he scanned the valley of the stone circle. The sight before him was one few had witnessed. All clans gathered as one. It was an unusual occurrence, happening only once every 25 full cycles of the sun. Arthviel had said,
"A Beltane of momentous importance."
Adam had to admit the sight was impressive. Custom demanded that 3 to 5 high druids of each clan attend a ceremony of this magnitude. Their tents clustered like white-cloaked sentinels standing guard on the entrance to the ancient wreath of blue stone. Tent flaps were open, like long white sleeves caught in the breeze. It seemed for a time they were alive, huddling and then reaching for sanctuary. In the centre of the stone circle, bare-chested men hauled wood and stacked the pyre for the coming festivities. Beyond the sacred space, a field of multicoloured encampments stretched out to the foothills. He should have felt excited, but on the morning of this Beltane, Adam's mood rejected thoughts of celebration, and instead, apprehension and doubt filled him. Amber eyes searched for his place on the hillside.
Is she here?
Arthvale's pronouncement that he was to participate in the night ceremony weighed heavily. The old druid had minced no words.
Adam, you will make yourself known as a changeling before the council tonight. After the lighting of the fires and the dance of light, I will send for you. Ready yourself.
Adam knew this night the clans would know him as a wolf. They would see his manhood markings. There was to be no more secrecy in what he was, or what he could become. He wondered if becoming a wolf in body made him a wolf in his heart. But who was he to ask such questions? He struggled with the idea that he was of major importance in the great pattern of life. And tonight he must sacrifice the one thing he had clung to since receiving the mark. His anonymity. Adam turned his back on the stone circle and strolled to the stream just south of the encampment. When he closed on the stream's tree-scattered bank, the sound of voices brought him from his thoughts. He listened closely to the sounds of female voices raised in song to the coming of the sun. Adam was lured to the singing, pulled to the song, but found the singer to be an old woman perched upon a boulder. She was staring down at 2 young females who took up her song. One was clearly still a girl, with white blonde hair and a small frame. His heart skipped a beat when he saw the fiery red hair of the eldest girl.
She is the one.
His skin prickled. This was the spirit walker he had followed. Adam stood frozen. He could not stop himself from listening to the song. No, to her voice. When it was finished, he felt a sadness wash over him. He remained motionless and concealed behind a large tree.
This is she. She who passed the curtain and crosses the veil.
The 2 young females were sent to the stream with a wave of the old crone's hand. They filled skins with water, then stripped their clothes and began to wash themselves in shallow currents. He watched. They played and splashed each other with cold water, giggling and shrieking for one another to stop. Adam thanked the goddess for providing a mostly unobscured view of their unclothed bodies. It was not his desire to look upon them secretly, but he could not stop himself. The old woman looked in his direction, but quickly turned back to her charges, calling to the younger of the 2. Her name was Athene. The older was now alone in the stream. Her back to Adam. He saw her shoulder. She carried the mark.
Adam looked down at his right hand, and then back to her. She was too far away for Adam to be completely sure, but the symbols appeared to be the same.
It had to be so. It would only make sense,
he told himself. The desire for a closer look was overwhelming. Shedding his clothes quickly, he tucked them into the branches of the tree that had hidden him from view. And then Adam called to the wolf. After quickly shifting forms, he slowly and silently emerged from the tree's shelter, in his wolf form and under the cover of low-lying branches. He crept closer. The red-haired beauty was nearly dressed when he drew nigh to her. He'd missed the chance. Adam should have retreated at once, but something held him against his better judgment. The old woman called to her.
Aliyan, come. There is still much to do. Yes, Tabjila.
Tangled russet ringlets dripped on a saffron smock, leaving wet patches as she ran to the old druidess's side. His father had been right. She was a woman full grown, and Adam had seen no one more beautiful, not even the seductive Lian. When they had departed, Adam shed his four-legged form, bathed in the stream, and dressed. He threaded his way through the camp. One huddled group of women heaped mounds of mistletoe near another huddled group. The second group wove many crowns. The best and largest would go to the high druids and druidesses of each clan to be worn during the ceremony. After the lighting of the Beltane fires, all would wear mistletoe in honour of the Great Mother. Other groups crushed berries of deep purple. They had been carefully gathered from small thorny bushes, which maintained their dusty green foliage even through the bitterest of winters. The fruit of this bush was an important part of the ceremony as well. After being crushed and mixed with water to render a paste, each member of each clan would be painted with a blessing symbol. The fire, doused hours before, left smoke clinging to the very air. It hovered above the valley, pretending to be clouds. The clan, camped directly across from Adam's, assembled the towering wheat likenesses of the Mother Goddess. These would be burnt within the gateways of the stone circle. The sun was low in the western sky. Preparations drew to completion. Arfael sat on a log, talking with Adam's father when he arrived.
I must join the elders. We are beginning,
Arfael stated plainly.
Gather the dancers of light, Adam, and meet me at the field of sacrifice.
The gnarled old man did not wait for confirmation, but turned and strode away. Yes, father, I shall see you at the circle. Adam forced a smile.
I'll never be missing a sight like that. You dancing in the light. Go, go.
Lef's beard split, flashing white teeth, and he sauntered toward the milling crowd. Adam entered the tent and changed into a loincloth cut from tanned cowhide. A flush of heat tingled at his cheeks. It covered much less than he preferred. He stepped from the tent bare-chested. A plainly cut brown woolen brat sat on his shoulders, making his coal-black hair purposefully unruly. He streaked his face with blue-grey paint. The other 12 dancers were not difficult to identify. They all looked similar, with only slight variations in the painted faces and hands, necks and backs. The warrior clan's offering was ready. A row of 13 poles jutted from the ground and held decorated clay pots filled with pitch. The vessels were cradled in knotted slings and fitted with long handles of braided rope. Once lit, the flaming vessels would be swung over the heads of their bearers to create the Dance of Light. The dancers, together with their pitch pots, formed a column and advanced to the field in an impressive display. The bards of each clan gathered in a group, speaking in hushed whispers. Every other voice raised in a song to the setting of the sun on this final day of the cycle. Eventually, the bards left the huddle one by one and moved to stand at the heelstone.
when the glowing orb was no longer visible in the sky, but instead cast its light about the drifting clouds, causing them to come to life, reflecting orange, pink, yellow, and then a mixture of all colours. The watchers rejoiced, stomping their feet and beating their thighs. There came the sound of a horn. It blasted 3 times for each of the clans. The blood of 13 prime cows spurted in a pool on the earth. Honey, grain, and milk were given in sacrifice to the goddess mother as a gift to her greatness and in gratitude for sustaining the lives of her people. In unison, a circle of black-robed bards began to speak.
From the beginning,
male voices rang, while the bards dropped to their knees and revealed a smaller, green-clad circle of women.
Through the ethers,
female voices echoed, one after another. Bards stood with each repeat, until a perfect balance of male and female was achieved, completing the circle anew.
Before time was time, great mother has been.
They intoned together.
She cradled us in her womb.
The mother of us, stretching out her hands to us, and lifted us to her breast.
Suckling us, when we die, she will take us into her arms, and we may return to tender grows once more, and for all lifetimes to come.
A single note from the horn blew, and the bards raised their voices to match it. Drums beat, and all the high druids stepped into the gateways of the henge. Young girls, all dressed in saffron smocks, hair plaited with red and green ribbons, scurried to the white-clad druids. They delivered small clay jars of herbs specifically mixed to call upon the protection of the mother goddess. Snowy robes billowed in the wind as the elders converged on the pyre. Drums echoed their footsteps, and voices lifted in wordless song, and then all fell silent.
We come, Mother, fill our field with grain, our streams with water, our bellies with meat, our hearths with fire.
The druids threw the clay jars, smashing them on the pyre. They lifted hands to the sky, and lightning struck. The pyre burst into flame. A hushed awe passed through the crowd. The high druids returned to the gateways, hoods thrown back, mistletoe crowns exposed, and broad smiles visible. Adam and the other light dancers took up positions just outside the stone circle, 10 paces away from the high druid of their clan. And behind Adam, a young woman of his clan approached with an unlit torch in her right hand and a circlet of bronze on her upper arm. He knew her, but had paid her little mind as she was so much younger than he. Fertha was her name, a plain girl with mousy brown hair, squared features and wide hips.
Good for childbearing,
Carmack had said one day not long ago. She brushed past him, torch extended to Arthael, and then turned, a seductive smile playing at the corner of her thick lips. The smile was not meant for Adam. He felt relief and a sense of comfort, for it was meant for Petar. Adam hoped that if there were someone to love, his old friend would find his way.
There!
She was carrying a torch to the gateway. The red-headed Alian solemnly handed it to the old crone whom he had seen at the stream earlier. His heart raced, and confusion took over his thoughts. Arthael's eyes followed her, nodding his approval. She did not look in Adam's direction as she returned to the throng and disappeared from sight. The thought crystallized in Adam's brain. She was sad. Adam knew the ceremony well and awaited his time to dance. Arthael, along with the other 12 high druids, approached the fires of Beltane in the center of the stone monument with unlit torches in hand. Sparks fluttered in the air like fireflies on a hot summer night, spiraling into nothingness. The Raven clan placed weak goddess figures just outside the gateways. Torches blazing, the council set the likenesses to flame and formed a single file line, exiting the stone megalith and circling one right and one left until they stood before the gateway assigned to their clan. Asked the elf-faced Adam as the others faced their clan's dancer. Touching the pitch pots with the flame, they stepped back and handed the torches to virgin girls who had not yet taken the rites of womanhood. He knew that an innocent must deliver the ritual flames of Beltane to the clans. The 13 virgins, serious in their duty, retreated to deliver flames to every hearth in the encampments. Adam raised his hood and watched them go. The feast horn blew once, and each dancer swung the pitch pot over his head, building momentum. A warbled, whirling whine shattered the night. Drums hammered and songs filled the darkness. The pitch pot streaked above hooded heads, and spirals of light danced golden red against the black sky. Young, strong limbs leapt from the ground. Adam became one with the drumming. Powerful arms whipped the pitch pots into perpetual motion. The heartbeat of the mother echoed in the valley. Carved wooden pipes whistled for the wind, and the flames of Beltane roared and crackled. Jugs of water were emptied onto the ground. The rhythm slowed. The feast horn sounded, and the dancers stopped. The new year was born. Summer would come yet again. But for Adam, the sacrifice had not yet been offered. In accordance with custom, he returned the pitch pot to his high druid's tent to be carried home. He washed the dancer's paint from his face, dressed in woolen breeches and a loose white shirt, and then slipped a bronze carved band about his throat. He aimlessly walked the campsites, greeting and sharing mead with men of his age. Celebration was in full swing. A sense of urgency stopped Adam from having any real fun. Only once in the time he roamed among the clans did he glimpse Aliane as she was ushered past him to the council. At the time, he felt it was just as well there was no opportunity to disobey Arthfael. Well into the night, Lef was called to the council. Adam's father was a proud man. He walked to the heelstone with deliberate strides, back straight, shoulders squared, head held high. Just before dawn, Lef returned to where Adam sat on the ground, leaning against a log, eyes closed in deep thought.
Arthfael wishes your presence at the council. He asks that you prepare yourself for the changing. You're to wear nothing but your brat, son. Go to him.
Adam stripped his clothing and wrapped his brat about his body. He left his pouch in the hands of his father, where he knew it would be well protected. A blue stone lay at the centre of the council's meeting area. Adam waited until he was acknowledged. To his surprise, it was not Arthfael who called to him, but Bele, High Druid of the Raven Clan. He stood atop the flat blue stone, lifted his staff into the air, and brought it down in three thunderous blows.
Adam of the Amber Eyes, brother to the wolf, I ask you to show the council and all present that you are truly a changeling.
A hush fell over the crowd who had crept forward to witness the shapeshifting.
For the Mother Goddess,
Adam said, thrusting his arms into the air, exposing the backs of his hands for all to see. Crouching to the ground, he raised the hood of his brat so that no part of him was exposed. The transformation itself was a secret that could not be shared. Adam silently called to the spirit of the wolf. Three heartbeats passed, and nothing happened. Then another three followed. Would he fail in this test? A hive of stinging bees filled his belly. He called to the spirit of the wolf again. He felt the change begin. When Adam was sure the transformation was complete, he moved from beneath the brat. An audible gasp was heard and released with an awe that seemed to circle him twice.
This is the spirit of the wolf. He and he alone can join with the Great One to fulfill the prophecy. Without his wisdom and skill, the Great One will never be whole, and the prophecy will never be complete.
Bele's voice, deep and resonant, was carried by the wind to each ear in attendance. He let the words hang there until the power of them died away.
When the time comes,
he pointed his staff to each of the council members in turn.
When the time comes, he will require your help. You will send the most powerful of your young druids with him. And in this way, the druid way will never end.
The council members murmured amongst themselves. The crowd spoke in questioning whispers. Bele raised his staff again, and a hush fell over the crowd. The stillness was pierced by a horrific scream.
How exciting is that? Great stuff, isn't it?
It is. So what is Adam's fate? Who is screaming?
For that, you'll have to read the rest of the book, but I can tell you, you wouldn't guess what the screaming's about.
Mm.
You can find more about the Mark of the Druid in our show notes.
Right then. Well, to bring us forward from the new life of Beltane to the height of the sun at midsummer, let's listen to the wonderful Dave the Bard with Noon of the Solstice from his album Spirit of Albion.
In times long past lived a man of green, and his footsteps brought life wherever he'd been. In the deepest wildwood was the place he was seen, and the people did love and protect him. And they saw his face change with the turn of the wheel of the seasons. They heard his voice sing, "I'm the horned god, I'm the face in the trees, I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wildwood, I roam, Kernanus, I'm Pan and I'm Hearn." I shall be as the Dark Holy King. Darkness and cold in my cloak I will bring, but on winter's nights to me you will sing, till the air around me starts changing. And on the noon of the solstice I'll give up my crown to the light and the mighty, O King. I'm the horned god, I'm the face in the trees, I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wildwood, I roam, Kernanus, I'm Pan and I'm Hearn. I share with fire and water from earth into air. Oh, but the wheel, it keeps steadily turning. And on the noon of the solstice I'll give up my crown to the cold and the dark Holy King. I'm the horned god, I'm the face in the trees, I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wildwood, I roam, Kernanus, I'm Pan and I'm Hearn. winter has gone and the air it is clear. On a fine day I walk through a wood I live near. Oh, when a battle I spy through a clearing. Two giants of leaves, one light and one dark. Even now the wheel it is turning. I'm the horn god, I'm the face in the trees. I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wild wood I roam. Kern on a sign pan and I'm her. Sign pan and I'm her. Kern on a 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 sign pan and I'm her. On the horn god, I'm the face in the trees. I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wildwood I roam. Kern on a sign pan and I'm her.
And that was Noon of the Solstice from the album Spirit of Albion by Dave the Bard.
Yay! Well, I thought we might cover something a bit different in this show.
What did you have in mind?
Well, one of our long-time listeners and supporters is the well-known Dave the Bard. That's Dave, spelled D-A-M-H. And we were invited just recently to his studio, weren't we?
Oh, yes, we were. And thank you very much, guys, for the invite. We had lots of fun.
We did. Thank you. Well, we were also, while we were there, we were lucky enough to get a small preview of four or five of the songs from Dave's up-and-coming album.
Oh, yes, that's true. Dave is well known for his powerful songs that deal with subjects from Celtic mythology. And we, along with some of our listeners, had heard that his new album would be far more folk-based than based on Celtic myths.
That's right. So we were really pleased when Dave offered us a preview. What did you think of the songs?
I think they were amazing.
They were superb, weren't they?
Absolutely. I think his songs keep the atmosphere and almost the drama that Dave is able to portray. And he's used songs that are linked to mythology.
Yes.
Even though they're considered folk songs.
That's right. The elements of the supernatural are still there, aren't they?
Yes, and it's
the fey realms entering in the sides.
But it's definitely Dave the Bard. You couldn't...
The power and the magic of his voice carries it on, definitely.
Yes, I am waiting anxiously for his new album. I can't wait to hear it all.
I think he told us that it's going to be called Tales from the Crowman, or Tales of the Crowman?
Yes, I think so.
Something like that. So keep your ear open for that one. It's going to be a goodie.
It is, definitely. This show's running a little long, so let's dive straight into some listener feedback.
What a good idea. We received a message from Jen, and she says,
I wanted to tell you how much I really enjoy the work that you two do.
Oh, that's kind of you, Jen. Thank you.
I have a very strong love of the ancient, and I feel a special kinship towards the Celtic myths. I've read every translation of the Ulster cycle stories, as well as the Fenian cycle tales that I can get my hands on. It's so nice to know there are other people who share my love of these stories. In fact, you two are the only other people that I've met who seem to share my interests. It's wonderful knowing that I'm not alone.
I must admit, Jen, that before we started the show, we thought we were alone too. And now we've found there are thousands of people all over the world that share our love. Thank you so much for your kind words.
Yes, Jen, thank you. And a very warm welcome to our clan.
Yep. We're going to skip a promo again and go straight into our last piece of music.
Yes, there can't be many of you out there who haven't heard of the outstanding mythic band Omnia. Let's call in the fae for Midsummer Night with a track by Omnia. We're incredibly proud to be allowed to bring you this track from their 8th album, Alive, called Fairy Tale.
child of the pure unclouded brow and dreaming eyes of wonder. Though time be fleet, and I and thou are half a life asunder. Thy loving smile will surely hail the love gift of a fairy tale. Thy loving smile will surely hail the love gift of a fairy tale. I have not seen thy sunny face, nor heard thy silver laughter. No thought of me shall find a place in thy young life's hereafter. Enough that now thou wilt not fail to listen to my fairy tale. Enough that now thou wilt not fail to listen to my fairy tale. Hearken then, ear voice of dread, with bitter tidings laden, shall summon to unwelcome bed the melancholy maiden. We are but older children, dear, who fret to find our bedtime near. We are but older children, dear, who fret to find our bedtime near. Blinding snow, the storm wind's moody madness, within the firelight's ruddy glow, and childhood's nest of gladness. The magic words shall hold thee fast, thou shalt not heed the raving blast. The magic words shall hold thee fast, thou shalt not heed the raving blast. And though the shadow of a sigh may tremble through the story, for happy summer days gone by and vanished summer glory, it shall not touch with breath of bale the pleasance of our fairy tale. It shall not touch with breath of bale the pleasance of our fairy tale. Though time be fleet, and I and thou are half a life asunder, thy loving smile will surely hail the love gift of a fairy tale.
That was wonderful.
Oh, it was. And if you haven't heard Neomnia before, we definitely recommend you head over to their website at theworldofomnia.com and check them out.
And on that great high note, we'd like to wish you all a wonderful midsummer and hope your summer is bountiful.
And if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, have a wonderful midwinter.
And many Yule blessings
yes.
to you.
And we hope the weather is not too cold for you.
Oh, go on. I can't resist bringing you guys a promo for another wonderful podcast.
What's that then?
It's a great little podcast and a really clever idea. It's called iPod.net Scottish Traditional Musician Discussion Podcast, as in, och I.
Oh, I see.
Top Scotland traditional musicians are asked questions about their music and careers in the world of Celtic music. They ask 11 questions about their influences, albums and folk tastes. iPodcasts exist to show how fabulous Scottish trad music is and reach a wider audience as possible.
Sounds great. Let's listen to it.
Hi there and welcome to iPod.net's podcast, where we ask some of Scotland's top musicians to answer 11 questions on their life and music.
Today we have Shannon Hassan, fiddler, bagpiper and guitarist from the northeast of Scotland.
When did you get the bug for trad music?
Well, I think it was probably when I was about 9 or 10 and I'd been going to this group in Inverurie called the Geary Fiddlers for a while. It's like a Strathspian Reel Society. But so I was doing that for a while, and then my parents bought me an Ali Bean book, the one that has the CD along with it. You know the one? I spent months just playing the tunes out of the book along with the CD, and I thought it was really cool.
That's just a small section of one of their shows, and they're all quite small, but an excellent introduction to some great Scottish Celtic musicians. Before we go, it's time to draw the competition winners from the hat.
Yay! The competition question was: the prose stories from the Red Book of Hergest and the White Book of Hraðirch were collected together in 1795. What is the name of this collection?
The answer is the Mabinogion.
The lucky winners have won codes to download the full-featured Bikey Irish language software with a value of $70, or any other language software that they choose and that Bikey produce.
In our hat we have the names of all the people that sent us the correct answers. Thank you so much to everybody who entered.
Yep, thank you.
So Gary will pull out the first and I will pull out the second.
Okay. And the first lucky winner is Sarah.
And the second lucky winner is Law. I do hope we've said your name right, Law.
Or is it Laurie? I think it might be Laurie. I don't know. But congratulations to both of you. Congratulations to Sarah and congratulations to Laurie.
Yes, congratulations. The emails containing all the information you need will be winging their way to you shortly.
Thank you to all at Bikey, excellent language learning software, for donating the prizes for our first ever competition. And thank you very much to all those who entered. Keep your ears tuned for another competition in the future. And that really, really, honestly, does wrap up our show. And we'd like to wish you many blessings. And until the next show,
Slongaboyle. A lady that describes herself as being enthralled with the world of the cows. Oh, Celts. Hang on. The world of the cows. A lady that...
Let's find a little bit more about... Blim, 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 blim. Blim, blim. Blim.
And we've also been nominated... Da-da-na-na-na... For the 2000...
What's that?
It was a really bad fanfare.
Oh, right, okay.
let's start that again.
Jersey Daisy. Cup.
Yes. Shall I read that again?
Yes, please. I'm sorry. I got distracted by cows.
Yes, let's not go there.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Howl, provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkenstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.